Hello, my name is Daniel Marino, and this is the Motion Martial Arts Podcast. In this episode, we sit down and talk about martial art versus martial sport. You know, how the practices differ, and the advantages and disadvantages to both. Hope you enjoy. Welcome to the Motion Martial Arts Podcast.
Hey guys, it's Dan and David. Back again. Today we're going to talk about martial sport versus martial art, which I think is a pretty important topic, and probably something that everybody's come to at some point in their martial art journey, is this question of where is the line between sport versus practical real life martial arts, and is there benefits to doing each one? Is there benefits in only focusing on one?
And even beyond the practical, real life, you know, self-defense based stuff, it was also just the idea, and we call them arts. It's like the idea of practicing, just literally an art form. Or maybe it's like, what's the purpose of art? Does art have a functional purpose?
Yeah, so...
Can. Doesn't always.
I think, let's kind of jump in with kind of like, so martial art, what is a martial art? And that's a sticky conversation of itself.
Sure. I mean, the one that's come up a lot with Ben Askren talking about it a little bit online. I've seen videos, you know, like wrestling, generally Western Greco-Roman wrestling, generally considered more of a sport. But I certainly would agree that it's as much a martial art as anything else, right?
Yeah. So we've said this before. Boxing and wrestling, in our opinions, are martial arts.
Yeah, martial arts are only, you know, Asian things that white people do.
So. Like, so I think that anything that is designed for combat is a martial art. Now, the question is I guess some of the martial arts have more of the ability to kind of have like an artistic quality to it. So.
Sure.
In karate, that would be kata, for example.
Yeah, absolutely.
In boxing, that would be shadow boxing.
And you know, just to be specific, like kata, it's like the idea of competition, kata, right? The idea of refining this preset sequence of movements to get an aesthetic appeal and that will, you know, win you points from a judge in a tournament. You know, I think it's an interesting, topic to get into is like, is that a martial art? I mean, it's certainly an art, but is it martial anymore?
Kata, and I mean, I think if you guys can go back and listen to the interview you did with Ian Abernathy, I think that's a good, because you guys really go deeper into kata.
Yeah, the practical application.
So kata is kind of an extreme end of things, and then tai chi is an extreme end of things, and then you kind of have Aikido and Hapkido are two things that are a little bit more on the extreme end as well. And then Tai Chi. I don't even know if I just said that a second ago.
Yeah.
Tai Chi is like all art, right?
I mean, in my impression, I'm not at all particularly familiar with Tai Chi, but it seems that, that's a piece of Chinese martial arts that's gone the direction of like health and wellness. It's a way of practicing that's good for your health, especially at an advanced age. And there's nothing wrong with that, but is it... Where's the martial
part? Those are the extreme end of kind of the arts thing where, like, so I mentioned shadow boxing. Like, shadow boxing kind of has the art side of the martial arts.
Definitely.
You know, so, like, there is a practical place for it, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, shadow boxing and kata, again, if kata is done in a way where you're practicing the actual... I mean, you can speak to this much better than I can.
Yeah, it's the application. You know, so there's the idea of pursuing, like, solo kata in and of itself. That is just the solo movement for its own sake. You know, I would say is, usually for competitive purposes, is, like, that's, like, the heavy on the art side of things. But then there's also guys like Ian who do, they pretty much, it's, there's body mechanics that matter with the way that you do the solo kata, the kata just by itself, because you're supposed, you want to be building good muscle memory and good habits with it. But it's really a pretty small part of your training, because it's the meaning behind the movements and the way that you apply them to, you know, drills with your partner and sparring with your partner that really matter. So he looks at kata more as it's like a good way to think of it is it's like a text. It just records, you know, the techniques and how they fit together and how they can be used together.
Yeah, so, I mean, again, I don't want to spend too much time on kata.
Sure, yeah.
I feel like that's a whole, again, there's a whole nother episode we can do on kata, yep. And you know about this more than I can.
Yep.
But I think somebody had told me at some point that the whole point of the kata period was to kind of, it was like pretty much like a way to carry it down to the next generation,
yep.
Right?
Yeah.
So some way to record, but the problem is that once it starts to spread to too many hands, people start to forget what was the actual reason why you were doing the movement.
Yeah, it was in the early 1900s when you started having karate being taught to very, very large groups of people. You know, when the way that, you know, in the time that the katas were developed, I mean, karate was just in a tiny little island, Okinawa, and it was like a teacher would only have a handful of students and it was very small, intimate settings. So it's just a progression of the art.
All right, so martial art, for our purposes, and I guess we really haven't had this conversation, but it is something that is designed for combat.
Sure, I would agree.
And that's the definition we're going to go with.
Mm-hmm.
So that has a wide spectrum of different things that you could be talking about, from boxing to wrestling, jiu-jitsu, judo, all the different karate. So, I mean, how many different styles of karate are there?
Hundreds.
Yeah. So like, that's a whole huge different conversation.
Yeah.
You have Hapkido, Aikido, Krav Maga. Sistema.
Sure.
So, Kali. There's so many different things. But, like, at the end of the day, what's the one? Bando.
Mm-hmm.
That's like Indonesian or something like that, right?
Yeah, I believe it sounds familiar.
So like, at the end of the day, regardless of what we think of the quality of what each one of those things translates to fighting, they are all designed first and foremost to be for fights.
Yeah, there has to be some combative element to the system, to the practice, otherwise it's not a martial art.
Yeah, then it pretty much becomes interpretive dance.
Yep. Yeah, and you know, things get a little bit, you know, I guess the topic that we're talking about today, when, you know, it becomes a sport, you know, you can argue. I think a good example is something like Olympic Taekwondo, when you have like a very, very, you know, restrictive rule set which develops very specific skills. You know, it's like, is that combat? Yeah, I'd say so, but is it really, you know, it is a competition. It's like a fight in some sense, right?
Yeah.
That it's, you know, I would say very little of it is going to be applicable to like any kind of real, you know, criminal attack or, you know, kickboxing, MMA, anything like that.
Well, it's the same thing with Olympic judo, because so like now you can't do any takedowns to the legs.
Sure.
So that means no double leg takedowns, no single leg takedowns, and it's all about getting those grips.
Yep.
And the grips are on the jacket. So you would, the only way it applies, and it can apply for sure, it's not that it can't, same thing with Olympic Taekwondo, but first of all, they're in range where they'd get punched, kneed, elbowed, and all this stuff. You need the person to be wearing a jacket or some heavy piece of clothing that you can grab.
Yep.
You know, so it's like, it starts to become, and then there's a bunch of these throws that don't translate
well
if they aren't wearing that. And that's why you see in MMA, where people are half naked, which again, MMA is a sport, and we'll talk about that more later.
Sure.
You have these half naked people, you can't apply a bunch of these throws, or you have to modify them a significant amount to make them work.
Yep.
And it starts to limit the amount of different throws and techniques that you can do.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, the transition to a sport, which is something we'll talk about, makes a huge difference, but if you take away the martial aspect of these things, and just leave the art aspect, it just becomes interpretive dance pretty much.
Sure.
You know, or competitive dance competitions.
You know, but I think that it's also, you know, there's a certain element of this that's just, you know, semantics and the way that we define words. It's not that that's necessarily a bad thing. You know, it's like, if I'm still training when I'm 80 years old, right, that's probably pretty much all that I'll have left, is maybe I can walk through my kata like that, and it's a good way to stay physically active. It's a good thing to have. And that's kind of the way that I interpret things like Tai Chi, that it's like, and that because China does have a very, very old, you know, martial tradition, is that it's like, it has value. It just has value for a certain kind of person, you know?
So my instructor in jiu-jitsu. He's under Horian Gracie, who's Elio Gracie's oldest son, and he has two sons, Huron and Henry Gracie. And there's a multiple times you can find like stuff of Henner talking about Elio training in his older years, so like his 70s, 80s, and 90s, and being like, he just wanted to survive. He would like grab some young guy and be like, here, try and choke me from the mount. And he would just defend, and that would be like his goal for the day. And he would be like, okay, this young 20-year-old guy can't choke me when he mounts me.
That's cool.
You know, yeah. So it's like, yeah, much smaller goals.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I think ultimately, we're talking a little bit more of the extreme art stuff so far, but the martial art is ultimately, you're training to get ready for a fight.
Yep.
Or for a self-defense situation. And that is important to keep in mind, because that should inform most people's training. Now, that makes a huge difference, or it should at least, I don't know if it always does, but like, as a striker, you need to worry about somebody trying to tackle you. And if you aren't having that thought, you're not probably training properly.
Absolutely.
And the same thing happens in jiu-jitsu, and it's more and more so. And Kyle and I talked about this a little bit in
about putting gloves on.
Yeah, jiu-jitsu in the last episode, yeah. Is that lots of jiu-jitsu, it used to, everybody was only doing jiu-jitsu in the United States thinking they were going to have challenge matches, which mm-hmm. were legitimately guys just showing up and fighting you in your school,
yeah,
or getting ready for MMA. Mm-hmm. And there was competitive jiu-jitsu tournaments, but the thoughts of that stuff was way, 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 way down the list. So everybody was practicing self-defense stuff. Everybody was thinking about, how do I close the distance safely without getting hit, without sure. getting kneed, without getting punched in the face?
Mm-hmm.
When I get to this position, what's the moves I'm going to use? I'm going to slap and punch here to get them to open up to get the attack. And that stuff is being completely eliminated.
So you'd say that was jiu-jitsu was being practiced more as a martial art back then, the progression has been more towards sport in recent decades.
Yes,
yeah.
And I would say the shift probably started, I mean, again, I'm guessing here, but my rough guess is that the shift probably started about maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit longer than that, but that's probably a rough guess and probably mm-hmm. a pretty accurate guess. Probably about 10 years ago is when the shift, and it's not that guys weren't training for sport jiu-jitsu, but most of the guys that were the top sport of jiu-jitsu guys
mm-hmm.
were like, I'm going to make a transition to MMA, and they almost all pretty much did. So if we go back sure. 10, 12 years ago, the guys that are going to be the top of the names mm-hmm. of jiu-jitsu are Jacare, who fights in the UFC right now,
yeah.
Hadra Gracie, who fought in the UFC and then was fought in Strikeforce, and he was recently fighting in Japan before he retired. Rafael Lovato now fights in Bellator. He's the champion, middleweight champion. He was a top jiu-jitsu guy back then. Andre Galvao, who owns Atos, he was fighting MMA. He made the transition to MMA. Marcelo Garcia tried MMA. Sanjay Hiberio. These are all the top guys from that. Jeff Monson was winning ADCCs and being a monster. Dean Lister, he fought in the UFC. Can't remember his name right now. Robert Drysdale, he fought in the UFC. I think he fought in the UFC. He definitely fought MMA.
So you're starting to see more of a divide, though, where, you know, less the top jiu-jitsu competitors are no longer making their, those guys aren't all going into
yeah,
MMA
exactly.
now.
It was unquestioned before.
Yeah.
You were like, the top guy is going to make a transition to MMA.
Yeah.
You know, and this is like...
Is it because they're making better money now just in jiu-jitsu?
Probably that's a huge factor of it, but I also just think that was the expected path.
Sure.
And part of it is that even in Brazil, challenge matches, that was a popular event. Yeah, and jiu-jitsu competitions were popular.
Vale Tudo.
Yeah, Vale
right.
Tudo.
Yep.
Yeah,
yeah,
so Vale
so
Tudo was
kind
of
like MMA. Yeah,
that's
yeah,
the original
yeah.
MMA, and the Vale Tudo matches were huge.
Sure.
So the guys knew that they would make more money doing
that kind of history
matches.
Is really interesting, because it's actually a really good way to think about it, and it's one, you know, that I think is really important for the karate community. I think to understand a little bit is that the sport will, like the sport format determines the direction of the art's development. So when you look at jiu-jitsu, for instance, and knowing that Vale Tudo was a common competitive format in Brazil at the time, so it created a system that worked really well against pressure. Now, this is my big criticism of a lot of the karate, you know, the karate systems out there is that the point fighting was the system of competition that became very popular across the karate world. And so that's what determined the direction that the art would go. That's what people were training for and stuff like that. And as a result, I would say, you know, it's a lot of, you know, large portion of the karate community, you know, is not developing skills that are very applicable for, you know, other forms of combat. It's too hyper specific of a competition format. And the other one I often would think about is something like Muay Thai, where it's like boxing, kind of kickboxing rules, so that kind of thing that develops. So, I can't help but wonder if it hadn't been point fighting for karate, it had been something like kickboxing that was big, you know, like how would that have changed the way the art would develop if you had a lot of karate guys that were just doing kickboxing? Like, that was the normal thing, like you had in Muay Thai or Vale Tudo in Brazil, with that kind of thing. So I think that it's a little bit of a false dichotomy when we look at the art and the sport as being separate things.
Yeah.
They really aren't. They come together, and the sport is a part of the art. Or it should be. Like, there are a lot of people that don't compete. I haven't competed in several years now, but I spent many years doing it and was point fighting. Again, not to say I don't see any value in point fighting at all. It's just something that I think that is good, especially for children, because it's a safe alternative to something that's like real fighting like that.
Yeah,
and I think that a good move for karate in the future is for more guys to be going kickboxing, MMA type route. I think that would make our art better. But, you know, and I know you and I both agree that, you know, the sport should be a piece of your practice, but it just shouldn't be the entirety of your practice.
Yeah.
So those are the two extremes. One is a lot of the martial arts community is like, and you hear this stuff a lot less anymore, but it's like, oh, my techniques are too deadly for MMA or something like that, right? Or too deadly for competition.
Yeah.
It's like, you don't really hear that as much, but that's the extreme of, I don't need to compete because no rule set can contain me.
Yeah.
And the other is, I'm only interested in the competition. And the problem that you get with that is that although you get a lot of good skills from competition often, you know, inevitably, as soon as you decide on a rule set, you start playing a game. And, you know, it's things that you can't account for with self-defense, with, you know, like a criminal attack, it's always going to be different. So you need both pieces of your training.
So, I mean, jiu-jitsu's popularity really skyrocketed because of the first UFC.
Yeah.
UFC 1 with Hoist Gracie. So you have Hoist come in, undersized, and he's doing what's considered pretty much the classic jiu-jitsu pathway, which is manage the distance, avoid the striking range, close the distance safely, either using a double leg takedown or an upper body clinch. Use that to get the fight down to the ground, hopefully staying on top, and then climb up the positional ladder. So that means you most likely are going to end up on top of the guard. You want to advance your position, hopefully to the side mount, and then to the mount, and then to the back mount. And if you end up on the bottom, you want to pretty much force the guys back to your guard, because that is your safest position while you're on your back, and eventually hopefully exhaust them enough from the guard position to sweep them to get back to the top or to submit them. If you sweep them, then you would again climb the positional ladder. So you go from guard to side mount, or you can stop sometimes in half guard, but you would go guard to half guard or guard to side mount. Then you would try to accumulate if you go to half guard, maybe the side mount. If you end up in side mount, maybe the mount. And then use strikes to get them maybe to extend their arms so you can get an arm bar, or to turn so you get the rear naked choke, choke them from behind. So that's what made everybody want to start training.
Sure.
And nobody had any other ideas, especially in the United States, of like, oh, well, this is the reason why I'm going to start to train. But then as it became more popular, jiu-jitsu in and of itself, and the competition started to get more popular, well, then it started to change.
Because it was grapplers against grapplers.
Yeah, yeah, and it there was always grapplers versus grapplers, so it's not like that didn't happen before.
Yeah.
But the thing is that everybody was using it as a pathway to fighting.
Sure.
And then the thing with that is that, again, so these are, it's a business.
Yeah.
Right? So who are you going to attract for the most part? You're attracting a bunch of tough guys.
Sure.
Even and this is irrelevant size has nothing to do with anything about who's tough, and that's a huge thing to keep in mind. And I'm probably preaching to the choir to everybody who's listening to this, because everybody is, I find it very unlikely that people that don't train martial arts are listening to this podcast. There are some, but you know, it's like, people look imposing and then you train with them and you realize that they're not tough at all. And then there's people that look like they're nothing and they're super tough. So the thing is that for the most part, it was only really appealing to tough people. So then how, you know, your fighting days are over or whatever, and you want to get more people in, or maybe you never wanted to be a fighter, you just wanted to be a teacher. You're like, but I want to teach more people. How do I get more people in? Well, how do you get more people in is you start to tone down on some of the fight aspects, right?
Sure.
Because you don't worry about getting punched in the face or like, how do I close the distance safely? You don't do that training. You don't do the death rounds.
The reality is that, you know, there are most people that take some kind of martial art, they're not really interested in being fighters like that, because fighting's brutal. It's rough, you know? And to tell you the truth, and I'm not even 30 yet, not that I've completely ruled it out for myself, but you know, I don't plan to really approach like kickboxing or MMA in any kind of serious way. Like maybe I'd like to try it just to say that I've done it, but that's pretty much it, you know? And you know, but I think that what the martial arts communities need to do though is that, you know, you don't have to be a fighter, but you should learn from fighters. You should look at the stuff that works in those fighting contexts, and you should try and you should train that way. You should learn those techniques. You should seek it out that way, because it's a good way to show what works. You know,
so I agree 100%. But let's flip the switch and kind of talk now more about the sport event and martial sport, so I mean, I don't compete a ton, but I still compete from time to time. Last competition I did was, there's a thing called Fight to Win Pro. Those of you that are familiar with jiu-jitsu will probably know what it is. It's kind of like a traveling super fight event. And I did it in April. And I actually just got offered a match for 3 weeks from now, but I can't do it for July 27th. But I'll probably do it again, hopefully, in October when it comes through, and I might do some more competitions, classic tournament style. But at the end of the day, I think this is super important. If once you make a martial art into a sport, people will figure out a way to game the system to try and win. And you start to lose the integrity of what competing was actually supposed to be about. And in my opinion, the whole reason why you have competition in martial arts is so the students at a school pretty much don't feast on each other and beat each other up. And then you also have a safe environment to open up and practice your techniques.
Sure.
And obviously it's toned down because it's not a no-holds-barred fight.
Mm-hmm.
And MMA is not a no-holds-barred fight either, which is important. And MMA, I'm including in this grand picture of martial sport. Mm-hmm. You know, like, the rules dictate what the person's going to do, but within that, people want to win first and foremost.
Sure.
So people are going to push the limits of the rules no matter what, because they want to win at all costs. So in jiu-jitsu competitions right now, like, if you do sub only, so that Fight to Win Pro is sub only, and I personally, that is my preferred way to compete, but you'll have lots of guys that are like, I'm not going to fight for a takedown. But that's a practical skill you need for martial arts, for fighting, for defending yourself. You might need to use a takedown. You might need to prevent a takedown.
Sure.
Well, there's guys that literally, and it happens in point-based jiu-jitsu tournaments as well, but it's like, there's no motivation to fight for a takedown. So lots of guys will just
both sit down
right away. And it happens a lot right now in points jiu-jitsu too.
Yeah,
I don't want anybody to be offended, because I think jiu-jitsu in any state is beautiful. I love it all, but I have complaints about both competitive.
Yeah, it's not
rule set.
Yeah, it's not that, you know, the competitive format has limitations. All competitive formats have limitations, so it's not a strike against it. And again, same thing I would say with point fighting. You know, point fighting is my only the only, you know, competitive format that I've ever competed in, you know, and it, and I'm glad that I did it because it teaches a lot of good skills. It's just that skill set is incomplete. There's a lot of things it doesn't teach you, and it can create a lot of bad habits too. You know, so point fighting is something where it's like, it's light, you know, generally light contact. You know, it's like you're not trying to hit hard. In fact, you get disqualified for hitting hard. And, you know, the theory that I've been told often is that it's like, yeah, what's easy to hit hard? What's really difficult is to throw a full speed technique and just tap with it. And, you know, like I heard that for years, and it's kind of like that's not true. You know, it's like, so, and even just taking out pads in my school, and you make a moving target, you know, I have, you know, like my training partner kind of walk around the floor and kind of avoid me when I go after him with something. It's that you'll find that like a lot of your hits, like it's not always a solid fight ending hit. And the problem with point fighting is that there's no distinction made between those. As long as you touch, it's a good technique. So whatever limitations there are in the jiu-jitsu format too, it's just like, it's more about the people that participate in that sport. You just have to acknowledge that the limitations are there. That's it.
The thing is that people ultimately want to win. So if you want to win, you're going to game the system. So the thing is, so sort of going back to the jiu-jitsu thing, and lots of the sub-only things, because there's no value in positions, guys will lots of times they get too comfortable sometimes with positions. Not that there's anything wrong, because I think that you should find lots of comfort, but they get too comfortable and they take it too far. And there's even some rule sets where people will choose to stall out because they know if they get into an overtime round, they're going to be gifted the back mount position or gifted the armbar position. Hmm. Now, on the flip side of that, with the sport of tournaments that are point-based, you have guys that won't go for finishes ever, so they're not developing the submission skills that they need.
Yeah.
And in addition to that, it creates bad habits lots of times for the person who's down on points.
Sure.
Because if it was a real-life fight, you wouldn't panic and fight out of those positions maybe with everything you have because you're down on points.
But this is my argument sometimes about like whether or not it creates bad habits, I think has more to do with whether or not the athlete kind of acknowledges that, you know, what they're doing is limitation. That, you know, you're doing something specific.
But I don't think, how many guys are thinking that? That's
all. Well, yeah, you know, I think that's something that,
because what's your motivation? So if your motivation is to do martial arts as sports, I don't think that the thought process is ever that deep, because the ultimate goal is to win.
Sure.
So you're going to do whatever it takes to achieve the best results. And this is something I want to talk about way more in depth in another episode. But Kyle and I talked about this a little bit in the last episode we just published, about how like this weight cutting thing is out of control. And it's big in jiu-jitsu, it's big in wrestling, it's big in MMA. I don't think it happens really in the karate world.
No, it doesn't, thankfully.
But like, you have people borderline killing themselves because they want a competitive advantage of being 5 to 10 pounds heavier than somebody. Literally, like, it's somebody's going to die. Like, if so, there was a fight, I think, last night, UFC. I didn't see the fight, but it was like Aspen Ladd versus, I can't remember her name right now, but I think she's like a Dutch kickboxer, and she's a former UFC champion. So Aspen Ladd showed in for a weigh-in. 135 is what her match was at, and I think she used to maybe compete at 145, but she's missed 135 a few times.
Yeah.
Showed up for the weigh-ins and pretty much looked like a person who was about to fall over and die.
Yeah.
And then got knocked out in the first round. So there's long-lasting consequences that's going to happen.
And nobody's ever died in an MMA ring, right? But people have died from the weight cutting.
Yeah, I think it's happened mostly in I think it's happened a couple times in Asia, maybe in Europe a couple times, but never in the United States, I think. But yeah, you have these people doing these extreme weight cuts for a competitive advantage. You have people using and abusing steroids and human growth hormone and testosterone replacement and all this other stuff to get a competitive advantage.
Sure.
Like, you know, because it's a sport, and this happens in every sport.
And also when the financial incentives come in too, that, you know, it's also their job.
So like the thing is like money. You might, and it's, I believe these guys, all the top guys can do it. It's not like they can't. If it's just some random person, all the top guys in every martial art are probably going to win most fights against an unskilled opponent.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, I don't care what you're training. And people make fun of Aikido and Hapkido, but honestly, if you look at some of the stuff they're doing for self-defense, and I break down the self-defense stuff into two things. We've talked about this before, too. The gentlemanly duel versus the, like, somebody grabs your collar, somebody starts pushing you. Hapkido and Aikido works well in that sort of self-defense thing where somebody's pushing you or grabbing you. So those techniques are going to work.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to beat up the average person who is unskilled, who doesn't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
So, like, I believe that the jiu-jitsu guys that are doing the behaviors I'm about to talk about are fine in a you know, self-defense situation. But I'm talking also about the highest level guys.
Sure.
So well, I'm talking about like purple belts, brown belts, black belts.
Yeah.
But
I would say you run into some issues self-defense-wise even with the highest level guys because, you know, it's not a fight. You know, there's also multiple opponents take into account, weapons take into account. So, you know, I think that it's really just a different pursuit if you're going to. There's, of course, plenty of overlap. A punch is a punch, and it does its job.
Yeah.
But it's things like, and these are things like Ian, who I've trained with a lot, that he stresses that, you know, it's like, you know, the obvious approach, if you're ever, God forbid, are attacked by multiple people, is you should just be trying to escape. Right, whether you're even if you're really good at your martial, and not that I'm saying there aren't, I mean, top level fighters, I'm sure would knock multiple people out no problem. I think especially like a good boxer probably would be in the best position against multiple people like that. But you know, you got to practice those skills. You know, you got to in your school. You know, you should be training drills that are specifically geared towards fighting for an escape, fighting for an opportunity to flee.
So I agree with everything you're saying.
Yeah,
but my point was more. Where I was leading with this is, so I think you take a guy who's a top level jiu-jitsu guy, we're going to use black belt as an example.
Sure.
And he's going to be able to take down the average person. One-on-one fight occurs, they're going to be able to take the person down, put him in a submission very quickly.
Absolutely.
I don't have any doubt about that.
Yeah.
But because what needs to work in competition is you need to do whatever's going to make you win. You have guys that go, yeah, but against a skilled opponent, my best thing is doing this. Pulling guard, getting a sweep. Pulling guard, tangle them up in these in their lapels and all this stuff. And the thing is that...
I think I saw a video from Henner talking about that.
That is actually creating behaviors that are bad. And if you start to have adrenaline going and you're not using your mind, you might get caught in a bad situation. You might get knocked out. But again... If you're doing, nobody, I don't care what anybody says. I don't care how self-defense based and fight based they are. When you make the decision to compete in the sportive aspects of whatever your martial art is, your number one priority is to try and win.
Sure. And I'm a total novice at jiu-jitsu, so please correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I saw a video from one of the Gracie brothers. I think I don't remember their name.
I'm pretty sure
remember.
It was
Tanner
talking about
yep.
Purple Belt emailed him saying...
No, it wasn't that one. He was just saying that it's actually, you know, often the way that you would defend against another grappler is often the exact opposite of what you would want to do to defend against someone who's just throwing punches at you, right? Because when you're, like, you know, you want your arms in to prevent somebody from catching an arm bar, right? You want to protect your neck.
Yeah.
Right? It's just a good example of things that are, it's just the sport and the art or the self-defense, they're just different pursuits. And I think that there's overlap. There's certainly skills that, like you said, that I'm sure a good submission grappler. Yeah. I mean, if it's just your average Joe throws a big haymaker at him, you know, he's gonna, maybe he'll get one punch in, grab him, throw him to the ground, and he'll be able, once he's on the ground, he's able to do pretty much whatever he wants. And those are skills that are applicable. They apply really well.
Yeah.
But there are other skills that, you know, are very related to self-defense that have nothing to do with the skill, with the stuff that he's developed, you know, through sport training, which is like having the awareness to know if there's multiple people. So maybe if you catch a takedown, you don't go to the ground and finish it. You take that as an opportunity to get out of there. And you don't want, you know, with adrenaline in the moment, you know, your training kind of takes over for you and you just do whatever you are most used to. So that's why it's important that you have, you know, that you understand the limitations of whatever competitive format you participate in. And then you have something that you do as a part of your training that supplements it, that tries to make up for the skills that you don't develop in your competitive practice. Right? That, and the issue with that, though, is like you said, do anything to win, is that top-level competitors, right, they're put all of their training time in, you know, often in drilling the hyper-specific things that are the centerpieces of their game. More generalist martial artists, if you say, you know, like you and I, you know, I'd say it's the competitive thing is great because it puts you under pressure. And that's what I would say is the value of competition.
Yeah, yeah, and that's kind of what I think we should, because I think we've been kind of so far mostly negative.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sounding about competitive
and
being a martial sport more, but I actually think there's a lot of positive things.
Oh, absolutely.
And one of that is what you just said. So, like, it teaches you kind of how to battle through sometimes adversity.
Sure.
I don't care how good you are. Everybody has lost.
Absolutely.
You know, so it teaches you how to battle through adversity. It teaches you, like, that you're much tougher than you think.
Yeah.
You know, it also shows you lots of times that no matter how bad a situation is, it's really not as bad as you think it is.
Yeah.
It kind of gives you a goal to work towards. It kind of can help focus your training. I definitely think, and this is my opinion, if you're going through a rut or you feel like you're plateauing, making the decision to find a competition and be like, oh, I'm going to do this competition in 6 weeks, I feel like that's a huge thing to break through a plateau.
Definitely, having something to train for.
Exactly, it gives you focus and it gives you, like, and again, I think for the most part, people that make the decision to compete, they're going to usually be like, okay, well, if I'm going to compete, I'm going to put in the extra work. So the extra work goes beyond the martial art. It's like, I'm going to make sure I'm doing my cardio. I'm going to make sure I'm doing my push-ups. I'm going to make sure I'm doing pull-ups, something. You know, it could be kettlebell swings, whatever your choice is for cardiovascular and strength and conditioning. It's usually going to push people to do that extra stuff. And then usually at the end of it, again, regardless of the result, you have something to look back on and reflect on and be like, okay, what did I do wrong? What did I do right? And I'm sure I speak for, you'll agree with me, and other people that have competed will agree with me. Sometimes you win,
mm-hmm.
and you're like, well, there was a moment there where I was this close to losing.
Yeah.
Like, I was 2 seconds to losing, but this person, I got out because of something I did, or they made a mistake. And there's other times where you'll dominate somebody and something silly happens. You make one mental lapse and you lose and you're like,
sure.
So it teaches you lots of times that, like, it can be, things can change around in a split second either way.
Yeah.
It can swing really bad or really good very quickly.
I think it's also just, you know, just the act. And again, we come from very, very different experiences of grappling versus striking. Specifically for me, point fighting style competition is something that's kind of specific. But it's even just, it's like adrenaline management, right? It's like learning how, like, so that's what I would say is good about any form of competition, is you learn how to, you'll learn how to perform under pressure. Then, you know, even though you're amped up, even though you're under a lot of pressure, it's a win or lose type situation. You get in there and you gotta give it your best shot. And, you know, when I first started, you know, teaching, pursuing martial arts full time, you know, that was when I started doing as many competitions as I could for a few years. And, you know, it went really poorly for me the first couple of years. And, because I didn't have that control. I did not respond particularly well under pressure. I felt that I fought, my sparring was so much better in the school than it was when I was out there on the mat, like it is for everybody. But I found after a few years of doing it, though, that I got better. It was more consistent. There was less of a clear difference that I could feel between the way that I fought in the school and the way I fought in competition. I think that, at the end of the day, is the number one benefit that you get from any kind of competition, is just that it teaches you how to be calm under pressure, you know, perform well even though you're on the spot.
I also feel like it helps you learn how to pull the trigger.
Sure. Yeah.
So like again, I feel like every person who's competed has had this happen where they're like, they didn't go for something, mm-hmm. and then they go back and they reflect, like, I could have had that thing. I didn't pull the trigger. And then sometimes you mess up and you pull the trigger too soon. You're like, why did I pull the trigger there? Why did I make the decision to go in for the kill there?
Yeah.
I thought I had something, but it really wasn't there. And I expended all my energy and I messed up. And that was a fight. I would have invested my energy at the wrong moment.
Mm-hmm.
And flip side of that is what I was saying before. Maybe you missed the opportunity. You're like, man, if that was real life, I would have had the finish. Fight would have been over, but I was too timid. And I smelled blood and I had the opportunity. I didn't pounce on it.
Yeah.
And then it came back and maybe it bites you later. Maybe it doesn't, you know, maybe you lose as a result of not pouncing when you have the opportunity. Because the thing is like in, it depends on what the format is, but in a jiu-jitsu match, you might have 6 minutes to get it done, which is longer than a fight's going to last in real life, but 6 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
How many opportunities against another skilled person are you really going to have in 6 minutes?
Yeah.
So if you see that opportunity, you got to learn how to pounce on it.
Sure.
And I feel like that definitely relates a lot to self-defense.
Definitely. Yeah.
Like if you see that opportunity,
go for it,
and you hesitate too much,
mm-hmm.
the opportunity's going to go away.
Yep. Hesitation. That's the big thing that, I mean, like a novice competitor versus an experienced competitor. So you learn how to do, not to hesitate, which I think leads to what I would say is the hardest thing to learn. And definitely a difference here, striker and grappler, but you can tell me if you agree, is timing, right? It's the hardest thing to learn how to do with compliant drills, for me with pad work, with stuff like that. It's like nothing really teaches timing like competition, like, you know, real resistance like that. And point fighting, again, you know, it's like, can be a little bit artificial in that you don't really need to hit hard, you just need to touch and stuff like that, but it certainly will improve your timing. You know, you'll know how to go after someone, how to seize an opportunity when you see one and stuff like that.
Yeah, so I feel like timing is a very difficult skill to do. And then I don't know what to call this exactly, but I think like another skill that gets developed well from competing that doesn't happen otherwise is understanding all the different angles and directions you can move.
Mm-hmm.
So like,
oh yeah,
I say this very much as a beginner in jiu-jitsu, you pretty much only know how to come forward.
Yep.
Then you understand over time, hey, I can go forward and I can go left and right.
Yeah.
But usually people just start with one side. So like, I can go forward and I can go left. Or like, I can go
talking
forward
about when you're standing on your feet, right?
It can be on the knees
both,
too.
Yeah,
yeah,
okay,
yeah. And it can be from bottom or top.
Which is funny because that's, I would say, the exact same thing.
So people are like, they understand you can go forward and they decide first that they can go left or right. Then they eventually figure out that they can go left and right and they can go forward. Then people finally start to realize, oh, I can go backwards.
Yeah.
So then they're like, okay, so now I can go forward, backwards, left and right. But there's all these other range of angles in between there.
Yeah.
And being able to develop like the skill to be like, okay, so I kind of don't want to go forward here. I actually need to move back. And then when I go move back, instead of going like directly to the left, I need to kind of like draw a circle to get to that left. And then maybe I'm plowing straight into them or whatever, you know?
Sure,
You know, it's kind of hard to describe to a certain extent, but I feel like people who train at a little bit higher level are going to understand what we're talking about right now.
A little bit of a personal story here, but I've only ever really had to defend myself once in my life. And even then, with conversations we've had in the past, is that I don't know if you would strictly call it self-defense. I probably could have walked away from that situation. But, you know, I'm not a pacifist, in fact. You know, like, that's why practicing fighting skills are important to me, because there are things that people could do to push me to fight them. So anyway, got in a fight with this guy. First thing I did was score a perfect point. I really did.
Yeah.
Something I did right was I kind of drew a line in the sand. I knew if he kept coming forward that I'd have to hit him, but I just tapped him because that was what was most natural to me, which again, bad habit, that's something that point fighting can create. Like, that's what I'd spent my whole life doing, was just that. So he was all over me with big haymakers after that. And, you know, something that struck me about it was that just having the ability to move side to side, gave me a huge advantage because, you know, he was just coming at me wild, like that, which is good. And most people's reaction would either be to freeze or move back, right?
Yeah,
but just having enough awareness that, like, circling was a good idea in that situation probably saved me from getting hurt that night or anything like that. So it was something that, again, just like you were just saying, even with grappling, it's the same thing. It's such a base level, like, fundamental skill that is like the ability to just move, to move four directions is huge.
What's crazy about you saying the moving back thing, though, and this is huge in my mind, is that I think that unless you train and you have the understanding of the directional thing that we're talking about, moving backwards is considered a sign of retreat, defeat, or weakness.
Yeah.
But that's not actually the case. So the thing is that if that same situation was an unskilled person, if they were to start going backwards, that means usually in their mind they've already conceded the fight.
Yep.
And they've given up. Because somebody who's unskilled, when that person charges towards them, if they think they're going to win the fight, they're going to charge at them too.
Sure. Yeah.
Start swinging back. Yep. But somebody who has some skills, like, okay, this person is going to close the distance more than I want them to be, so I'm going to go back to get back to the range I want.
Yeah.
And then I have more leeway for what directions I want.
Sure, yeah. You're talking about something a little bit more like a strategy there. You take a single step back and then a step to a side, or a single step back to give yourself a counter. I think that if a guy is just swinging punches at, you know, your average person like that, if they're, you know, covering your head with your arms and maybe moving back, and like you said, kind of already conceded, it's pretty much over if they do that. You know, it's kind of, it'll be over quickly like that. But yeah, just, I mean, you know, I remember, and I was a little bit younger, I think I might have been 18 at the time, that like just circling the guy when he was trying to knock my head off with that was a big help, you know. It made him always a lot harder to hit.
People aren't used to that stuff.
Sure.
You know? They've never seen that before, again, unless they're dealing with somebody who's skilled. And that idea of getting offline, making somebody have to actually re-engage themselves and reorient themselves is huge. You know, it's a huge skill.
Yeah. Yeah, but that whole thing was a good learning experience for me too, because that is a good description, a good way of defining like the difference between sport and like some kind of real combat, because I found myself in that situation where I had a skill set that was very specific to the sport that I practiced, and suddenly I had to make it work against someone who was doing something completely different, even if the guy was just swinging, you know, big haymakers at me.
Yeah.
And I took some punches that night, but having the ability to move around, first of all, gave me a minute to like get the lay of the land and realize like, okay, I really gotta hit this guy. The fight got broken up. Then we went at it again, and I came at him as hard as I could with a back leg round kick, hit him in the side, threw a punch, hit his shoulder, and then I'm not sure if it was the punch that dislocated it or if he started swinging punches after that, but the guy's shoulder got dislocated, and then he sat down and wouldn't keep fighting me and went to the hospital. So that's my story of you know, scoring a perfect punch, getting punched in the head a bunch of times, moving around the guy, and then going at it.
All right, so just to wrap it up, and again, these are topics that we're definitely going to come back to a bunch. I think that you got to find kind of a balance between the martial arts aspect and the sportive competitive aspect, because I think doing them together is what's going to make you probably the best version of yourself. Because honestly, I mean, hopefully most of us will never be in a fight, or if you've been in fights, which Dan and I have both been in fights at different points in our lives, and I'm sure some of you that are listening have.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's something that you never experience again, but training it as a martial art and also doing competitive things are going to make you the most prepared.
Sure.
And I mean, I kind of think that's probably a good note to wrap it up on.
Yeah, definitely.
As always, guys, thanks for listening. We appreciate all the support, and
until next time,
take care.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.